and welcome to Book City Roanoke. I'm Douglas Jackson, and I'm happy to be speaking with Ashley Rain today. She's a spoken word artist here in Roanoke. But before we start the conversation, I want to tell you a couple of things. One is that we have a sponsor for this, and that's Book No Further, down on Roanoke's historic city market at 112 Market Street. And I want to tell you that Book City Roanoke is it's a bit of an experiment. It's a lab where we're exploring engagement and equity at the intersection of books and place. And you can explore with us our things literary at bookcityroanoke.com. This season, we're taking a look at identity and action, how the written word helps us shape our understanding of ourselves, and then how we put that into action in the world around us. And Ashley, I want to thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking forward to the conversation. And we've gotten to work together on some projects.
Yes.
But I think I'm just beginning to get to know you.
Indeed. Yes, indeed.
I didn't want to describe you. Let me let you describe the work that you do.
Well, I'm Ashley Rame. I'm a local poet. I kind of got into poetry kind of off whim, really wanting to articulate and understand how I felt. So poetry fell into my lap. But it has helped me really identify myself and put those things in action, like we were talking about. And without poetry, I don't know who I would be. So thank you.
Well, when did you first come to it?
I first came to poetry maybe... I had moved back from Snellville, Georgia, small little place, Snellville, and it was very small. And I came back to Roanoke, and I was working at an office building, and I think it was maybe 2012. So not too long, but still a little while.
And when I think of poets in the area, you know, I think of you. You're out
Thank
there.
You.
You're very active. You're
yes.
you're writing. You're performing. Mm-hmm. You're a what we call at Book City Roanoke a city builder.
Yes,
you're pulling people together
yes.
around the written word.
You've
got a full time job.
Yes, I do have a full time job. I recently got back into full time job, but before then I was doing a little bit of freelance work and doing workshops. But I think doing it with a full-time job, it still allows me to be connected with the people that I actually need to be connected with. Because when you're hibernating and when you're just doing it all on your own, you kind of do it all on your own and you don't really have any help and you don't really have those connections. So I think the full-time job has actually helped me. And with the full-time job, I'm still able to do all of the things that I did as freelance. So that works as well.
And I should say that your full-time gig
is at the new Melrose branch with the Roanoke City Libraries.
The new, beautiful. Yeah, the largest branch outside of Maine,
yes,
right?
Yes, we have a whole runway for the kids to run through. And even me, when I'm going through to check the book drop, I feel myself walking a little faster down the runway. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is beautiful. And it's got the STEAM lab and
yes.
the business center and... meeting rooms.
So many opportunities for the children. And looking at the old library, it was time. It was time, and I'm glad that the kids have all of the STEAM lab. The adults have the quiet reading room for the kids who are running around and playing with blocks. And when story time happens, we even have an area for the teens, so the teens can be separated from the older kids. And that gives a lot more peace as well in the library.
I'm sure it's, I know it's important work. I'm sure it's at times difficult, but I'm sure that the patrons of the library enjoy having you there.
It's not always easy, but it's the type of work you go home from and you feel rewarded and you feel good. And I don't mind getting back up the next morning and doing it all over again.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we think about artists or, you know, poets, mm-hmm. People who are contemplative, who are sequestering
yes.
themselves away from
yes.
people.
You need and, people.
yeah. yeah. How do, and you're probably like everybody where you've spent some time where you've mm-hmm. been really immersed in your work and, mm-hmm. and not so much out there. Right. How does it change?
It changes. I think my, I feel like I work on a cycle. I kind of follow, I'm a full moon child. So I was born on a full moon. My grandfather was born on a full moon. So I kind of work my things out where I know I'm most creative around the coming of a full moon and things like that. So I try to get most of my work done during around those areas. And throughout the rest of the month, I write down my ideas, the thoughts that, or the lines that come into my head, or the conversations that we may have had at another meeting and a conversation. So it does change, but I think for me, my process, I have determined or decided, or even just realized where and when I work best. So I definitely say I follow a full moon cycle, and most of my creativity comes from around those times. And even noticing it when before I was working at Roanoke City Libraries, I was with Anthem, and I would have a sheet of paper on my desk. And around that time of the month where the moon was becoming full, I would just have a surge of ideas and have a surge of ideas. So I've kind of manipulated it a little bit to what works best for me. But my process would come around definitely around the time of a full moon.
Wow, that's great self-awareness.
Yeah, it took a little while to get there. But yes, and it definitely with taking on so many different projects and working full time, it kind of gives me a little more of a balance. I know when and where I can get my things done. So I know the ideas may come around the first of the month, and it may be overwhelming, and I may have a lot of anxiety about it. But I know I can just write them down and live inside that creativity for a little while, and then I know that when the moon's a new moon and everything like that, and everything's waning and waxing, I can actually sit down, focus, and actually pull everything else that I didn't get on that first bunch of one. You get the first line and you get the first hook, the hook and the sinker, but then it all comes back and it all comes to you.
There's a lot of wisdom there.
Thank you.
Because I don't know. I've spent a lot of my life being impatient, mm-hmm. for not knowing that it's going to come back around.
Right.
Feeling like, oh, if I don't grab this right now,
right.
It's not going to be there.
I think that with, I guess, knowing how anxious I would be and knowing I didn't want to feel like that, and I guess of... Hard work and changing my thoughts and things like that. But it really balances all out, and it works for me. It works for my process. And I'm the type of person that with things and when things come to me, we all need time to process them. So I try to remember that to process them in their right times, to, hey, relax, the full moon. Everybody says, everybody, the kids are loony around the full moon. Everybody's acting up, stay indoors, this and the third. I just know all these crazy ideas are going to come to me, and they may hit. It may be a new poem. It may be something that I can work with the kids. So it works out.
I bet I'll look out the window or off the balcony next full moon, and
yes,
I'll think,
you will.
I wonder what Ashley's working on right now.
Yes. And I'm probably in my room, probably with some candles lit and my James Ball on candle, letting it burn and getting some writing done.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's talk about words a little bit.
Okay.
What first got you, when did you first know that you had a thing for words, that you love words?
I was a sports girl growing up.
Uh-huh.
So I was basketball, softball, and things like that growing up. So maybe around my ninth grade year of high school, I picked up, I think, urban fiction novel, something by Ashley or Jaquavius, Sister Soldier, or something like that. And I was able to, I guess, see movies in the words. I was able to just see it so clearly. And I didn't really end up going out to any parties anymore with my friends and things like that. I just really wanted to stay home and cozy up in my bed and read a book. And when I would read those books, I felt like I could do it. I was just like, oh, I can create a story like that. Or that, I just thought it was a whole creative process that I hadn't really thought of, or that I hadn't really tapped into yet. I wasn't into reading anything that the school gave me or anything like that. So my grades weren't the best in my reading and my writing classes. They were not my favorite. So basically, I would say maybe ninth grade year, I found a book that identified with me, identified with a lot of the things that were going on in my surroundings, and I was able to pull from there. And I knew I loved words. And before then, I did realize then that maybe in middle school, I think a couple of my friends, we would keep journals and we would go back and forth with each other. But I can't remember. I think we used to write raps, maybe. I think we maybe used to write raps and want to be rappers. Right. But so basically, that portion, I remember definitely the portion of reading the books and after just being there, I think we created a login to blackexpressions.com, and we were able to just get so many books, and we were able to read, and we also shared them. So mm-hmm. I get 5 books and we read them, and then the next person gets 5 books and read them, and we would pass them along. So we basically had a book club going on at Fleming it was not underground. It wasn't anything written up, but we literally had a book club going at Fleming. I could probably count the hands of some of the people who are still reading that, still reading and writing now because of those books.
Oh, great. Yeah. Right. When you said you weren't going to parties anymore, you're under the sheets reading a book, was that difficult? Did people treat you any differently, or was it, oh yeah, that's Ashley, that's part of her thing?
Nobody really treated me different. I felt like I was mostly cool and friends with every little friend group. But I think it kind of changed on my part because I was the one throwing the parties. My dad would let me have house parties and I would invite my friends over and things. One day we broke a window and things like that. So it was, I guess it made me feel like that I could be myself. Mm-hmm. That I didn't have to always go out and attend the party or throw the party. That I was fine with just sitting home and reading a book. It's like, so yeah, it did change. It definitely changed some of my friendships and things like that. But I will say I'm mostly really still really good friends with those people that used to come by my parties and things like that. So so yes, and a lot of those folks, they started reading as well. I was able to pass a book along. So it changed, but I think in a positive way.
Great. Good. Great. Well, let me say that I'm Douglas Jackson, and I'm here with Ashley Rame. We're at Book City Roanoke, the podcast, and we're sponsored by Book No Further, Roanoke's independent bookstore. Stop in to peruse the well-curated assemblage of new and gently used books and engage in a little good old-fashioned book talk right down on Roanoke's historic market. And what I'd like to do now is give you a little chance to maybe give us a poll.
Okay, yeah. I'll give you a piece of The Color of My Soul. It's one of my favorites, and I say it's one of my favorites because it's one of the ones which really put me out there, in a sense. It was a poem that I could not only work with adults with, but I could work with children. So it led me into a lot of Girls Rock Roanoke, where I do the program and directing for the after-school program, and just other workshops around town with soul sessions and things like that. So, Color of My Soul. They say you learn something new every day. And I was asked the question, what color is your soul? What does your soul look like? And a friend of mine replied, that's deep. You see, I had no answer for this question. I couldn't think of one color, but I do believe that my soul constantly repainted itself while I paid no attention at all. And after wealthy nights pondering about the color of my soul, it hit me. I hope it's blank and fresh like a new morning sky, or it's as bright as the sun decides to expose herself today, gently awakening us with her touch while wind sings a sweet song around almond hearts with a message to unclasp the clamps that we secretly keep covered up. You may see results of her trembles, devastation her earthquake creates. She is not always full of tough, and she is not always marveled upon. And I know that I haven't known her to always be safe. She hasn't always been home. She learned to thrive in shadow. She spoils, matures, and shatters in secret at my feet, all while wearing painted smiles. Nobody ever really realizes how kindred she is to clowns. My soul appears raw and calm as nature does on any given day and night before self-inflicted wrath. She may seem busy and wary, but she is
passion orchestrated under moons well above the horizon. She is a veil of shadows upside down, directly parallel to light, anonymously colored to scaled eye. She is female wolf leading the pack, summoned by two moons on fall night. She is ground zero, top floor and ocean deep. She is impatiently racing time, harnessed and loose simultaneously, coloring herself beautiful with ink, paint, oil, light, words, you, them, us, love. She is many different colors at once. My soul is a synodic cycle that is dark and full of light after 29 days, illuminated by direct contact with its own darkness, and she only settles like stardust does at day's break. You see, my soul, she is the color of help. She is the color of hope. She is the color of pain. She is the color of taint. She is the color of strength. She is the color of power. She is the color of delight, deception, and rejection. She is the color of existence. She is the color of ugliness. She is the most beautiful creation that God has ever laid his eyes upon, and they say that you learn something new every day. And today I know that my soul is the color of stabilization, and that my soul is the color of life. Peace.
Thank you.
That's one of my favorite poems.
Wow.
One of my favorites. Thank you for allowing me to read that.
No, thank you. And let me ask you how, say, the girls at Girls Rock Roanoke or some of the young people in the workshops, how do they respond to that?
They usually respond in ways that you can't imagine. They go way over your board, way over your head. I think like, oh, it's just kind of, they're going to think of one color. But no, they think of the things, the colors that make them sad. They think of the colors that make them happy. They think of the times that the sky was a beautiful hue of four or five different colors and they can't really make it out, and how it made them feel. I think it allows them to really take time to dig into themselves and see their own light, and maybe the light that that others don't necessarily see, or just maybe light that they aren't really cutting the light on for, you know, that they're not just hitting their own switch. Mm-hmm. And so I think the kids can take it a lot of different ways, but I think for the most part, it gives them a chance to look inside themselves and decide what their color is. Mm-hmm. And what that color means to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I imagine they're told what color they should be.
Yeah.
Often.
Yep. They're told what color they should be. Or I think one girl, it's a line in a different poem that I wrote for my niece. And it was, who told you that your skin wasn't midnight, wasn't a midnight sky stretched across a canvas. And I was able to give her that line but even she pulled from that one and wrote something about the color of her soul. We have to allow children, people to define themselves and not have mm-hmm. others define them. And for a while, and I wrote that poem also because for so long I lived by definitions of others, but I wanted to define myself. I wanted to know exactly who I was. And mm-hmm. that poem was one that kind of came to me about that.
Mm-hmm. And part of that definition is what we're grappling with.
Indeed. Identity in action, how to move forward in the community with it. For me, through poetry, and especially with the color of my soul, it allowed me to, after I wrote that poem, I was able to identify myself clearly as a Black woman, a Black poet, a Black gay Christian woman. And I think even with giving my definitions within that poem and in more in detail when I am in workshops and things like that, it just allows the kids to really see themselves for who they are and not for what other people see them as.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a huge gift.
Thank you.
For a young person.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so you said you work with Girls Rock Roanoke. You
yes.
do workshops in the schools.
Yes, I work with, Girls Rock Roanoke, we have a grant with 21st Century, the after school programs, and they were able to bring us in, and I do the program and directing, and we work with, I use poetry and journaling as a source of self-expression. And so we start out groups with that. And then for the last 45 minutes of group, I usually invite someone from the community who can teach them about unhealthy relationships, healthy relationships. We have people like Planned Parenthood. We have a few counselors coming in that I know that I grew up with. Rayshawna Bell, she taught them thinking errors and things like that into how to combat those thinking errors and move around them. And a lot of the kids, they already knew how to move around them. They just didn't know that they were actually thinking errors. Like, and once they realized that, it's just like, okay, well, I have the confidence to do everything. We had Queens Vegan come in and teach them new foods, different options and things like that. So yeah, with Girls Talk Roanoke, we are hoping to prepare them for sixth grade, which is with a group of 10 girls to prepare them for sixth grade. And definitely with Identity in Action, we need them knowing who they are when they are going through sixth grade, because I think that is definitely a pivotal point where we define ourselves or people define us, and we either decide with it or decide to move along another way. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And besides that, we do workshops. I started out before I got into the Roanoke City Libraries. I did Teen Speak with the libraries as well, and that was a group that was at all of the libraries at first, and then we made a home at the Raleigh Court branch where a lot of the teens are coming from Patrick Henry, and we were able to have conversations. Sometimes it would be just discussions or conversations. Some teens just want to talk to someone who isn't going to reprimand them or, you know, I guess act like the adult in the room. I think some of the kids still kind of see me as a teen or in my early 20s. So I'm just like, but I use it to my advantage, and I listen to them and I let them talk. And if afterwards I pull them aside and say, hey, you know what, well, we can think about a better way to do that. But I allow them to express themselves and allow them to be who they are.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And let's talk real quickly. We're almost out of time, but I know you're a reader, so, and we love getting some recommendations too. If there's anything that's on your shelf right now, or that gone back to lately.
What am I reading? Well, a book I always go back to is Zora Neale Hurston, Their Eyes Were Watching God. That is one of my favorites. Of course, Giovanni's Room, James Baldwin. The Fire Next Time is one of my favorites with James Baldwin. But what am I reading right now? And I currently work at the Roanoke City Library, so I have about 10 books out now. But let's see. I am currently reading... What am I currently reading? I'm reading So You Want to Talk About Race. And I can't remember the author's name at the moment, but it's a new book that has come through the Melrose Branch Library. And that's one of the books I have picked up. I've also picked up like an astronomy book. My ranges go from different things, you know, with poetry and things like that. They all one ties into another somehow. So yeah. But those are the books I'm reading. But definitely anything Zora Neale Hurston, anything poetry, Dewey Decimal System, 8-11 is one of my favorite sections. So if you have any questions there, I got you there. But anything within the poetry section, and I like to read stories that I can identify with, that I can identify with, and that I can grow with, and that I can grow from.
That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, I'm happy that I live in a community that has Ashley Rame.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to be exploring how we grow together as a community, how we grow individually. Yes. And the poem that you shared too, the kind of the vulnerability that's embedded in that, and kind of the presentation of the self. Yeah. You know, We're afraid to do that a lot of the times.
We are afraid, and I think that in order to change the community or to make any progress, you have to be willing to put yourself out there, and it doesn't come easy, but anything with poetry is bravery, so I like to think I'm pretty brave at times. At times.
Yeah, well, I think you are too.
Thank you.
Well, and thank you for being in the community. Thank you for being here today on this episode of Book City Roanoke.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. I want to thank our sponsor, Book No Further, on Roanoke's historic city market. I want to thank Brad Stevens with Agape Podcast, who's provided production assistance. And I want to ask you to join us next time with our guest, Joe Cobb, who's vice mayor of the city of Roanoke and co-author of a family memoir. He's also a very thoughtful reader, and he's bringing us some books. Find Our Things Literary, such as author interviews and an inventory of local book clubs, at bookcityroanoke.com.